Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres, and every week I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Altvader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Oh, Carlos, you know, I'm having a bit of Florida withdrawal. When I left Naples on Friday, it was 80 degrees. When I got home to Toledo, it was 30 degrees. I want to go back. I love it down there. We're going to talk about Florida later in the show, and I love Naples. Hey, Carlos, football season is finally over, but what a finish. New England won the Super Bowl again in one of the best games ever. What'd you think of that game, Carlos?
You know, I'm going to tell you this. I have never seen anything like that before. Well, wait, it never happened before.
Yeah, no kidding.
No, it was an incredible game. I have my radio show that I have on Saturdays for the Spanish-speaking people in the tri-area of New Jersey, New York, and Delaware. And the thing that I got pounded because, you know, from that area, there's a lot of people that hate, I mean, not only there, but there are a lot of places that hate New England, right? So when I said that New England was going to win, oh, my goodness gracious, it was like I had called the devil or something. I would have spoken and say any you know, damnations to anybody, and they would have taken it like nothing. But this? No way. I could have cursed and it would have been that bad. But then I made the mistake of saying, of posting in Facebook, you know, the score that I said the day before. So you can imagine how things were going when it was 21-0 and then 28-3. I remember saying, hey, not over. And then he said, well, if that's not over, what do you think is going to be? Well, wait. Thank God they came back. And
what do you think Roger Goodell was thinking at halftime? Oh, I'm good. I don't have to go. I don't have to go to the Atlanta locker room. Yeah, I'm good. I can just go over here to Atlanta locker. This is great. And then they turned that around and said, that was hilarious, man.
He must have been like maybe calling Dan Quinn, hey, you better run that ball. Don't pass it. Don't pass it. Run that darn ball. But, man, that's really
the only mistakes that Atlanta made was they should have run that ball in the second half, take some more time off the clock, kick the field goal, be happy. They would have won. They would have won.
They died by their own sword, you know, because they were a passing team. So they you can understand it. It's not, to me, it's not as bad as it was not to run it with the beast from Seattle at that time when Pete Carroll did it 2 years ago. But, but this one, you can understand somehow that, you know, that's their strength. You have the MVP of the league there. You have maybe, if not the best wide receiver in football right now, in Julio Jones. I mean, I would argue that maybe Antonio Brown, it might be even better than him, but you can expect that. And that was another thing.
I don't think they
targeted him enough. Only four catches, but what four catches? A lot of four catches.
That one on the sideline where he leaned out and snagged that and the toes, that was really a great catch.
Yeah, really I heard Bill Belichick say that he was ready to throw in the flag, but when he saw the replay, he said, no, it's not even close. I'm going to put this flag back in the pocket.
Carlos, this is really hard for me, this whole Super Bowl thing, because, you know, Brady, you know where he played his college ball, right? right up here at Michigan. Okay. Yep. Yeah. Ugh. Okay. And that Gabriel kid that caught all the passes for Atlanta, and the Falcons All-Pro center Alex Mack, and then New England's head coach Bill Belichick. At one time or another, they were all let go by the Browns. You know, the Browns have such a great eye for talent, right? So, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this was just, you know, but what a game. What a game. I don't know. I'm not a big pro football fan. As a matter of fact, I hardly watch any games all year long, just hardly any at all. But I did watch a Super Bowl, and I thought that was a great, great football game.
Most definitely. I tell you, whether you were a fan or a hater, because with New England, there's no middle ground. You either love them or you hate them. So, but as a fan of football, that was an incredible game. That was an incredible game. And to me, I'm just happy that I witnessed history, so many records, and such a great game. It was great.
Yeah.
It was great.
Hey, Carlos, but hey, let's talk a little golf, man.
Let's talk golf. It couldn't be better.
I know. You had a big weekend.
What? Hideki and Sergio winning the same weekend? No.
And then John Rahm last week, who you called? I mean, you're on a roll, man. You're like a decker. You're in the top five.
I'm on fire, man. This is incredible. I'm like, whoa. No. I can only say, you know, this is happening. I am feeling it. Right now I feel the music in the background coming up.
You can't stop it. You can only hope to contain it.
There it is. There it is. Yeah. It happened. Yeah. Hideki. There it is. Many.
And Hideki, that was a great comeback. He played well on the back nine there, so. Hey, Carlos, I want to mention that the February issue of NWO Golf Links will be available tomorrow. It will hit the hit email boxes tomorrow morning. If you are not signed up, you can visit nwo.back9mediagroup.com to get your issue every month. We got a great issue this month. We feature, we talk about what shaft weight is right for you. We talk about some great golf resorts to visit if you're driving to Florida from the northern section of the United States. And we talk a little bit about how caddying and the Evans Scholarship can have a positive effect on young people's lives. And our good friend, Jay Flemma, wrote about a golf course in New York that was saved by a couple along with the help of the community. But, Carlos, for tonight's show, I mean, we're loaded. We got Tiger Woods talk. Tiger had to withdraw again. We're going to talk about what that means for him. We talked about New England winning the Super Bowl, one of the best games ever. Hideki triumphs again in Phoenix. Sergio beat the Terminator in Dubai. What a weekend of golf and football. So let's go.
Let's go. And we have in the practice range, of course, you're going to talk to us about that Florida trip, you know, you just took there. You're going to tell us everything about it. I'm not even going to say a word about it because it's so great. And also, we're going to have Lynn Josephson. You interview her. She's the president of GLN and Golf Life Navigators, and great opportunities there. And so she's going to be our VIG. You don't want to miss that. But it's time. It's time for me to say it. It's now 5 wins in 9 starts for world number 5 Hideki Matsuyama. Yeah, the 24-year-old, my guy, he birdied the par 4 17, which was the fourth playoff hole, to beat Webb Simpson and become the first man to retain the Waste Management Phoenix Open since Johnny Miller did it back in 1975. And he joins a great company there because you know who else have done it? The Bear and Ben Hogan. So that's big company. And he now has become the most successful Japanese player on the PGA Tour with 4 victories. No other has won more than that. Matsuyama, he shot a bogey-free 5-under-67 on day 4 to get to 17-under, and he was just – it could not be an inch. I mean, if he would have blown it from he was there, if he was just blow a little wind, it would have gone in. That's how that last pot, how close he was from getting in and winning right out. But he matched clubhouse leader Webb Simpson, who shot 7 under on Sunday. Webb was on fire. I mean, he could shoot anything, and he would have gone in. But Hideki had that makeable birdie putt that I tell you on 72nd green for victory, but left it agonizingly short. All it needed was a gust of wind, and it was in. But the wind didn't blow. You know, 54-hole leader Benny Ann, he played an impeccable golf for 63 holes, but a closing 4-over back 9 of 40 left him 3 short. The 2015 BMW PGA champion and 17-year-old U.S. amateur champion bogeyed the drivable par 4 17th as well as the last. But now in Matsuyama's last 10 starts, he has won 5 times, finished runner-up twice, and also recorded a fifth-place finish. He told the PGA Tour through an interpreter, and I quote, "The results have been really good this last few months, and hopefully we can keep it going. There is ups and downs, especially when I'm playing bad or having a bad day. What I'm trying to do now is to work hard, correct what I'm doing wrong, and continue on. It's been a good run. I'm going to ride it as long as I can." End of quote. I don't know what he calls having a bad day, because I haven't seen one from him in the past 10 weeks. But, hey, he says that he has some bad days. But, anyway, he's the hottest man in golf currently with 5 wins, 2 runner-ups, and a fifth-place finish in his last 10 starts, like I said. What was surprising was how he seemed to give off the impression that he didn't play well, despite shooting a bogey-free final round, which included a tapping eagle. He said, "I don't know if I played that well, but I won. That's, I guess, the bottom line." End of quote. You know, for Benny Ans, we know him, will surely be a PGA Tour winner soon. He committed to a bigger U.S. schedule this year, so he will have expected to play the final 2 holes in 1-under par, which would have been enough to get in the playoff, but a bogey-bogey finish left him a sour taste. And he, you know, Ben has been close to PGA Tour victory before, losing in a playoff at last year's Zurich Classic of New Orleans, and we expect him to win one soon with the experience he has gained, especially there in the European Tour. Another player that I can tell you, it was great to see him, although he plays well there, is Ricky Fowler. He's showing some form leading up to the season's opening major there at Augusta after finishing just 2 shots off the playoff. He said, and I quote, "Game is good right now. It was nice this week. Didn't make very mistakes. 2 bogeys over 4 days, which is nice. I felt like I managed my game well. Definitely looking forward to going from here on and to the coming tournaments." End of quote. You know, Webb Simpson finished 2nd. Louis Heisen also shot a 6-under that day. He finished solo 3rd. Ricky Fowler was there, joined with J.J. Swan for co-4th. Benny Ann finished 6th. Daniel Berger and Martin Laird finished co-7th, and co-9th was Jordan Spieth, silently and steadily there, 70, 68, 67, and 67, finished a co-9 with Matt Kuchar and Graham DeLay. But Fred, the whole show was Hideki Matsuyama, who won for the 5th time in 9 starts, and now is the world number 5.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely, you know, it just keeps making a statement, but you know, the leaderboard was really crowded. When I tuned in on Sunday, I mean, there was 10 or 11 players within 2 shots of the lead. So a lot of people had a chance to win that, but Hideki closed it out. Jordan Spieth, as you mentioned, had another really good week. Ricky Fowler always seems to play well there in Phoenix. So Benny Ahn, he just faded on Sunday. You know, he's got some learning to do there. Hopefully he'll take some lessons away from that. But you know, PGA, the TPC Scottsdale, I texted you, those last 4 holes, 15, 16, 17, they create some real drama. Those 4 holes create the best finishes all year on the PGA Tour, I think. And, Carlos, I have to ask you, so we're down to the end, they're going to the playoffs. The football game's starting. They're going to the kickoff. Playoff or football? Playoff or Super Bowl? What'd you do there?
Right there, I'll go football.
You went in picture. You went picture in picture. I know what you did.
Oh, man. You're calling me. Don't do that. That was for you. That was like in Vegas. That should have stayed between us. Now everybody's going to be like,
you did both. I know what you did, man.
You're covering me. That's not fair, man.
Well, us poor people, we had to click back and forth at the commercials in between plays to see what was going on.
Hey, but you benefited. I texted you what was happening. You could still see the Superman. Play by play. You benefit from it.
Hey, Carlos. The only other really big tournament going on this weekend was on the European Tour. The LPGA and Champions Tour refrained from playing this week because of the Super Bowl. Sergio Garcia, your boy, Sergio Garcia, opened with a 65 on Thursday in Dubai and led all 4 days to capture his 12th career European Tour victory. Henrik Stenson, the Terminator, tried to catch Sergio, but despite rounds of 68, 68, 67, 69, that pretty much averages out to be a 68. I don't know if you can figure that out or not, but over at Dubai course has been very kind to Stenson in the past. He just couldn't catch the Spaniard. But as good as Sergio's win was, perhaps the bigger story for the week was the withdrawal of Tiger Woods on Friday morning due to back spasms. Tiger was walking very gingerly on Thursday, and in fact was not moving that well in the two rounds he played at Torrey Pines last week. We talked about that. His agent, Mark Steinberg, said Tiger is not having nerve pain, but is not able to get the back spasms and tightening under control. It's affecting his swing and play. Unfortunately, Tiger withdrew 1 hour before his Friday tee time, and the second round ended up being postponed until Saturday due to extremely high winds in the desert. We're going to talk more about Tiger in the Par 5 news coming up, so that's all I'm going to say about that right now, but Tyrell Hatton had another good week, finishing solo third as the guy we're keeping our eye on in Europe. Matt Fitzpatrick, Peter Yale, Uline, and George Koecke also posed the top 10 finishes. Ian Poulter, there was an Ian Poulter sighting. He was in the mix, but on Sunday, 76 dropped him to T15. Martin Keimer also posted a poor final round, 74, to finish T23. G-Mac was in the field. McDowell made a start in Dubai on the European Tour, and finished T13 with Raphael Jacquelin. Carlos, that's all I have for the European Tour, unless you got something else.
You're asking me if I have something to say about Sergio Garcia? I mean, does the Pope want to do...
You're going to talk about his fiance. I know what you're going
to
talk about. You're
going to talk about the religion. Women. I mean, this is just like the Pope wanting to talk about religion. Of course I have to say something about Sergio.
Finally, you don't pick him. Finally, you pick him every week, and when you don't pick him, then he wins. So,
that's how he is with me. I think he's mad at me because I'm now with Matsuyama. But, hey, Sergio, I got your back. I got your back, okay? You're still my guy, too. Hey, I can have two guys, okay? It's okay. You can be there. You're from Europe, and Matsuyama's from Asia. I still have to get a guy here from America, so don't worry. But, it's great to see him back in the World's Top 10 for the first time since June 2015, after he won this one, Wire to Wired. He led since day one. He opened incredible with 7 under 65. He was playing there with Tiger. He shot at the closing 69. He began the day three clear of Henrik Stenson. He started the day great. He hit it to 4 feet immediately on the first hole to start with a birdie. Henrik came close to Garcia on that back nine when he had birdies on the 13 and 14. But, wow, on the 15th, Garcia closed that door shut. He had a stunning birdie, too, at that 15. If you didn't see it, I mean, that 6-iron was massive. His tee shot came to rest no further than 2 feet away, making for the easiest of birdies. He then came to the 18 with that 4-stroke lead and tapping for par for that 3-shot victory. So, it's great with that. He's now into the World's Top 10 again. Henrik Stenson moves up to third right now in the official World Golf Rankings. Like you mentioned, also Tyrell Hatton is one of the guys that we're keeping an eye on. He moves up to a career 19th in the official World Golf rankings with that T3rd. He's now the ninth highest ranked European and will be fully focused on qualifying rightfully for that 2020 Ryder Cup at Le Golf National in Paris. And you also mentioned Ian Poulter. He ended in a tie for 15. He's making good progress after that foot injury that kept him out of the 2016 Ryder Cup. This is his best finish since last year at the Puerto Rico Open in March, so it's great to see him back again. But with that, we'll wrap up our weekend backspin. We are going to take our first short break, and when we come back, we're going to have our Par 5 news, and you, Fred, are going to start talking about Tiger Woods, so don't go away. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the Par 5 News, where every week we recap the best news that we see around the world of golf. And Fred, of course, last week it was news that Tiger Woods was playing again, second back-to-back, but you called it. Let me tell you, you called it here on the show. You didn't see him walking right there in his first tournament, but now he withdrew, and you have some more information on that and everything that's going on with Tiger.
Yeah, after Tiger Woods missed a cut in the Farmers Insurance Open at Torrey Pines, he tried to fly to Dubai for the pre-tournament commitments, but in Los Angeles, due to the protest demonstrations condemning President Trump's recent executive order that banned travelers from seven Muslim-majority countries from entering the U.S., he nearly missed his flight. He had decided to fly commercial to the Middle East to avoid a layover if he flew his own plane, and it was the first time he'd flown in a commercial plane for 10 years. So I have come to find out that he flew on an Emirates special class plane that has that separate compartment, so it has like a little the seat goes out into like a small bed or cot or something. So he did have that, but I just can't imagine that riding in that commercial plane, even though that's a special cabin and all that kind of thing, I just can't think that that helped his back rather than riding on the G6 and having a bed there that he could go stretch out on and get comfortable. So, you know, we've talked before on the show about travel that professional golfers are forced to endure. And, yes, world travel seems pretty enticing to the huddled masses yearning to be free, but in reality, too much travel is not good on the body, especially a 41-year-old body with achy knees and a touchy back. The problem is that Tiger did not look well in the Farmers Insurance Open, and even worse in the Middle East. Brandel Chambly commented after his opening round 77 and said that Tiger looked like an old man. I look at Tiger and I can't help but think he looks like an old man. He looks like the oldest 41-year-old man in the history of the game. I saw him getting out of the bunker on the first hole and he was standing very stiff and upright as if he was getting out of the bunker, and he looked like he was walking around protecting an issue that he wasn't speaking to. That's very much what it looked like to me. That was Brandel Chambly's comments. Tiger hobbled around the first round for a 77, which left him near the bottom of the field after Thursday in Dubai. You know, Carlos, this bad back, these back spasms, it just doesn't bode well for Woods. He's scheduled to have this week off and return next week for the Genesis Open at Riviera in L.A., plus then fly back to Florida for the Honda Classic in 3 weeks. We've seen golfers fight back spasms before, but what's causing them? Will muscle relaxers work? If he can't practice and play, is he just wasting time? He may even need to take more time away to get his body completely healthy. You know, time is a cruel factor for any athlete. We are seeing it get the best of Tiger Woods right now. And just a quick note, there's no update coming out of the Woods camp about whether he's going to play next week, if his health is better, if the back is better, if he's practicing, nothing. There's just no comment. So that's not a good thing. If he's not commenting, that means there's nothing positive to say. So here's the bottom line, Carlos. Woods last won a PGA Tour event in 2013. That's going on 4 years ago. And has only had one top 10 finish since 2014. He missed a cut in the final three majors of 2015. That's over a year ago. And was not able to play in any major last year. He's had three back surgeries plus countless knee surgeries. He's a walking medical marvel. How will he ever be able to return to competitive golf on a regular basis and compete for major championships? Carlos, I hope you have some answers because that just looks very bleak to me.
Unfortunately, Fred, I don't. I don't. And I have to agree with you. I ever since you said, because I really didn't focus that much on seeing how he was walking and what he was doing. Of course, we didn't see much. He missed a cut. So what we basically saw from him at the Farmers Insurance was not that much. But I really didn't focus on how he was walking. I just saw him missing some shots, and I was just saying, well, he's still rusty and all that, so I'll give him more. But like you mentioned, it would not help that long flight that he has to take. I don't care your first class there on the Emirates Airlines. That is not the same bed that he has on his private jet. It's not at all. He just wanted to avoid the layover, but, you know, instead of that, he should have just think better and not do back-to-back tournaments, knowing that he's coming back. To me, the biggest mistake is going
back. If they're going to throw you $2 million to go to the Middle East, and you're going to turn it down?
Man, then don't play Farmers Insurance. Play another one.
He wanted to make a statement. He wanted to play Torrey. That's the site of his last glory. He wanted to play Torrey. He loves Torrey. Eight times he's won there. That's his home ball yard there.
Well, look at it now. He had to leave there, and now who knows what's going to happen. Really, I don't know. I hope that he really regains his form somehow and comes back and plays next week.
Well, here's the thing. He's never played Riviera with a dam. He cannot play there. He does not have the right kind of game. He doesn't like the golf course, and he's never played well there. The only reason he's playing there is because all the money's going to his foundation. That's the only reason he's playing there, because he doesn't like the golf course at all. He played there when he was young, and then when he finally got on the tour, he quit playing there because he didn't like it. He waited and played in Florida. So, you know, he's going to try and tee it up next week. If he's any way, shape, or form able to swing a golf club, he will tee it up on Thursday and Friday. Will he make the cut? Very doubtful. But that will give us a chance to see one more time, you know, what he's going to look like. And, you know, we said going into these four tournaments out of these 5 weeks, we would learn a lot about Tiger Woods and where he's at. And I'm telling you right now, Carlos, if this does not get taken care of pretty quickly here in the next 2 weeks. We're down to the wire here. If he doesn't get healthy, he's done. He can't go out there and keep playing like this. It's embarrassing to him. It's a problem. He's got to be sick and tired of this. I mean, from where he was to where he is now, that has to be so demoralizing to him that he's just got to say, why am I doing this? I don't need this anymore.
I think he should start thinking about that Tiger 2.0 thing and dedicate a lot
Taylor,
of it, because to me...
CEO, yeah. Or chairman of the board at TaylorMade, looking better to him?
Looking a lot better. If I were him, I would start getting the money together to buy that thing. So we'll see. But anyway, moving on to some other news from various players on the league. The organizers of the ISPS Handa World Super 6 in Australia say that Patrick Reed has withdrawn because of a respiratory infection. Reed is playing the Phoenix Open. He was playing the Phoenix Open this week, but You know, the World Super Six in Perth is still 3 weeks away. Organizers say that the infection keeps Reed from traveling to Australia. So that World Super Six is 54 holes of stroke play, followed by 6 holes of match play in the final round. It's unfortunately that we're not going to see Patrick. We know how much he loves to go around the world and play in those kinds of tournaments. So for him not to be able to play this, to withdraw, is definitely that respiratory infection is maybe worse than what it is. Also, in some other news now, police reportedly arrested 2-time PGA Tour winner Stephen Bowditch and charged him with extreme driving under the influence. It wasn't a simple DUI. It was extreme. After they found him asleep at the wheel early Friday morning, Bowditch, who was playing in the Waste Management Phoenix Open, was swerving all over the road with his white pickup truck before being found at the intersection of Scottsdale Road and Lincoln, according to the police. Bowditch was 33 years old. He sat through the 2 green signals in his car while the engine was still running and was then arrested at 1:10 a.m. local time. A blood alcohol content of above 0.15 is classified as an extreme DUI, according to the Arizona Department of Motor Vehicles. Penalties potentially include 30 days in jail and a fine upwards of $2,500. If I were to bet, those 30 days are not going to be there. They would be commuted, but maybe some hours of community service. After he bunded out of jail, he played his second round there at TPC Scottsdale. He shot a 3-over 74. He missed a cut, but then he shared this message following his round, and I'm going to read it to you. On Twitter, he posted, I would like to apologize to my family, friends, and supporters, as well as the PGA Tour and Waste Management Phoenix Open for the incident reported today. As I intend to fully cooperate with the authorities, I will not be making further comment at this stage. End of quote. The Australian has a painful history of struggling with mental illness. He has experienced many depressive episodes during his professional life, including in 2006 when, according to a 2009 magazine profile, he chugged an entire bottle of scotch, slept for 2 days, and then attempted to drown himself in the pool of his Dallas condo. So hopefully he can get the help that he needs and come back, because he is one heck of a great player, and I believe this is just keeping him from reaching that great potential that he has. And finally, also, global giant IMG has won the race to manage one of the players that we have for you that we mentioned that you have to look forward this year, and that is cut-slow golfer Curtis Locke as he prepares to turn professional this year. The world's hottest amateur, Locke, has been pursued by every major management company in the world for the past few months, but he chose to go with IMG in a huge coup for the company. Locke joins the likes of Henrik Stenson, Alex Noren, Brandon Grace, and Martin Kaymer on IMG's books. Follow West Australian Min Jae Lee also opted to sign with IMG when she turned professional at the end of 2014. You have to remember that Locke will not turn professional at least until after the Masters at Augusta National in April, but IMG was allowed to announce his signing provided the agreement is solely in relation to the golfer's future as a professional golfer and does not stipulate playing in certain amateur or professional events as an amateur golfer. The 20-year-old was currently there in Dubai as he was preparing for the Dubai Desert Classic, but he will return home to play the World Super 6 Perth from February 16th to the 19th. He has had a brilliant 12 months, topped by his win in the 5th major at the U.S. Amateur in August, as well as victory at the Eisenhower Trophy, Asia-Pacific Amateur, and the Western Amateur Open. He was also Fred, the lowest amateur at the Australian Open in November before winning the West Australian. Hawk is definitely hot, and that is a guy I'm looking forward to seeing much more when he turns pro professional this year.
Yeah, I think he is definitely somebody to watch. Hey, Carlos, I want to mention, too, that Pat Perez had to withdraw on Thursday from the Waste Management Phoenix Open due to tightness in his shoulder. You know, he had that surgery repair returned last year, got a win last fall, so he's kind of being very careful with it, but I guess it's okay. It was just some inflammation, and he's got to take some meds and rest it. Carlos, let's talk a little bit about the USGA. It held its annual business meeting last week in the Washington, D.C. area, and Executive Director Mike Davis enlightened the attendees with a new concept in golf tournaments for disabled golfers. Next in the works, according to various USGA officials, are national championships for men and women involving disabled golfers. There are a lot of details to be worked out, most of it having to do with what would count as disabled. But as Mike Davis said, there are millions and millions of disabled people in the United States, and it would make sense to recognize them. The USGA already works with the National Alliance for Accessible Golf and Special Olympics, and is concerned to make everyday facilities more amenable to disabled golfers. But we can do more, said Davis. He admitted that planning is still a few years out, describing it's not 10 years, closer to 3 or 4. Such an event might also be undertaken in tandem with rules modifications for playing equipment for disabled golfers. Carlos, I applaud the USGA for this effort and hope they are able to get it up and running. We give the USGA a lot of grief for their action and inaction, but this is exactly the type of thing that they need to be using the $100 million they get each year from Fox. At the PGA show 2 weeks ago, I learned that the USGA would be taking a much more active role in state golf associations and are making the state organizations comply with stringent rules and regulations to even continue to operate. They will also be announcing new amateur events for various age groups in the near future. The USGA is doing something to update and modernize the golf industry at the amateur level. We hope they get it done and it improves golf down here at the amateur level. The USGA announced last week also, this is a really good thing too, they also announced last week that longtime Oakmont and Seminole head professional Bob Ford would be given the USGA's highest honor, the Bob Jones Award. We've had Mr. Ford on the Back Nine Report, and we're very happy for this recognition and wish him all the best, Carlos.
And I second that. Hopefully, you know, we get more to know about this and everybody as well. Hey, let me talk a little bit about Aditi Ashok. She is quickly becoming the face of golf in India. Last year, the 18-year-old represented India at the Rio Olympics when golf made a reappearance after a 108-year hiatus. She became the youngest golfer to win the Ladies European Tour's qualifying school, making her the first Indian-born golfer to win a Q school of an internationally ranked tour. She subsequently won 2 Ladies European Tour tournaments, becoming the first Indian to win on the tour, earning Rookie of the Year, and in December, she became the second Indian-born golfer to earn her LPGA Tour card. When she picked up golf at 5 years old, it immediately clicked. She dedicated herself to golf, foregoing playing competitively in other sports, and in the process, she started racking up trophies. Then at 13, she turned more heads when she won a professional event on the Women's Golf Association of India Tour. The victory reinforced what perhaps she had already suspected, that she would be able to compete on the global stage. But as a junior golfer, she did not have many Indian golfers to look up to, particularly female golfers. While Smriti Mehra became the first Indian-born golfer to earn status on the LPGA in 1997, Ashok said that Swedish Hall of Famer Annika Sörenstam was her hero. Ever since the British introduced India to golf with the construction of the prestigious and private Royal Calcutta Golf Club in 1828, the sport has struggled to find its footing in India, where, of course, cricket is the king there. But it has less to do with people not having an interest in golf as much as it does with economics and accessibility. You know, the Pew Research Center recently found that only 15% of the population can truly be considered middle class. who on average make $10 to $20 per day. A round of golf at a public golf course can cost between 500 and 750 rupees, which is $7 to $11. The cost, coupled with the fact that 30% of the population lives below the poverty line, certainly contributes to the sport's language growth. The second pressing issue, there simply aren't there enough courses. Currently, there are 210 golf courses in a country of 1.2 billion people. Compare that to the United States, which has 15,372 courses for a population of 318.9 million. Physical accessibility is extremely limited in India. Even more limiting, 40% of the golf courses are on military bases and restricted to military personnel only. But Ashok hopes to see this change. But despite the hurdles golf faces in India, there are several organizations whose mission is to help promote the sport in the general public. The Indian Golf Union, the IGU, founded in 1955, has worked to promote golf, stating that its mission is to promote and development of golf in India, duly approved by the Ministry of Youth Affairs and Sports, Government of India. Back in 2004, the Women's Golf Association of India was created under the IGU with the goal to promote women's golf. The WGAI hosts a series of professional golf tournaments for female pros and created the first ever caddy training program for both males and females in partnership with the Ministry of Tourism in India in July of 2012. The Golf Foundation, founded by avid golfers in India in 2000, specifically funds junior golfers who otherwise would not be able to afford to train. The selected juniors receive daily stipends and specialized coaching and state-of-the-art golf equipment. In addition, those juniors receive financial assistance to play in golf tournaments. These small incentives are part of the reason golf is the fastest growing sport in India. That, according to Indian golfer Jeev Milka Singh, who was the first Indian golfer to play on the European Tour and win. He stated that that growing number of golf tournaments and golf foundations, that India is moving in the right direction and that golf is going to get bigger. There are very few stats to support this statement, but the IGU said on average they have enrolled 600 new members each year. Singh also stated that in an interview that having golf in the Olympics would certainly help with the sport's popularity, and about that, Asha herself reiterated that the Olympics certainly sparked an interest in golf that was not there before. Nicholas Cavard, who is Asha's strength and conditioning coach, has worked with her since 2010 and believes she has a special opportunity to grow golf in her home country. Outside of her sphere of influence, though, he concludes that the role of growing golf should not be put strictly on its professional, but also on the ruling bodies there. So, Fred, as Ashok is preparing for this upcoming LPGA season, her focus is not only on the history she's made, but also on the impact that she hopes to make through playing well and the changes that it's going to bring in India right now.
Yeah, you know, we've seen some men come out of India. They have such a huge population. Arjun Atwell, Anirban Lahiri, who's been at the top of the golf world for the last couple of years on the world, we've seen. But you mentioned Jeev Milka Singh. So we've seen some good men come out of India, even though, you know, they don't have the best facilities over there. But we've not seen too many women. And so with that many people, the odds are that you're going to have some good players come out of there. It just has to be. So, like China, India is the second most populous country, right, behind China. So good for them. Hey, Carlos, to round out the Par 5 news tonight, kind of some bad news, actually bad business news. Even though Scott White, who was the CEO of the Ben Hogan Company, said a couple of weeks ago when we reported this that the death of the company had been greatly exaggerated. The Ben Hogan Equipment Company, which unveiled a revamped brand in irons in 2015, has filed for bankruptcy, as reported by the Dallas News. The Chapter 11 petition filed with the U.S. Bankruptcy Court in Fort Worth last week. Among its top creditors are Perry Ellis International, who's owed $267,000, which licensed the Hogan name to the company, and Conti Edgecliff, which is a landlord in South Fort Worth, owned, who is owed $77,000. On January 3rd, MyGolfSpy reported that the Ben Hogan workforce had been laid off, and White said at the time the company was in a reorganization, would be leaner and more profitable. Carlos, this is a once proud brand name, played by the best players in the game and renowned for its quality of product. I'm afraid it's another in a long growing list of changes in the golf equipment business that will not make it into the future or be forced to make dramatic changes.
It's unfortunate because they have a great brand and great products. I really like it. Of course, it's not that well distributed or well known throughout the world, but hey, they really have great products. Hopefully, they can come up with something and stay afloat. But we'll see. We'll see how that goes. Hey, with that, we'll wrap up our Par 5 news. Let's take a short break. When we come back, we have Fred, who's going to be telling us all about that sacrifice that he made for the Back Nine Report and having that such a bad time going throughout Florida exploring golf opportunities. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the practice range where every week, every week, Fred and I pick a topic and we talk about it. But this week, you know, I don't think I can talk much because this is Fred having that sacrifice for us to get all this information. He had to go that week down there to Florida, and you know, it's bad enough. So we'll let him talk a little bit about it here. And Fred, you were in Florida this past other week. You took a great trip there. You went all around. You were there also for the PGA merchandise show. So how about it? Let me let you start talking to us about this trip, and I'll make you some questions about it as you go along.
Okay. Well, Carlos, as you know, as you mentioned, we spent a week in Orlando at the PGA show, which was great. I really enjoyed that. We reported on that last week. We also did some other stuff while we were in Florida. We spent another week traveling around, visiting some sites. On our way down, we stopped at St. Augustine for a couple of days. My wife loves the beach there. It has a gorgeous beach, a large surf that attracts surfers and wakeboarders from nearby. And it's a blast sitting there on the beach watching the surf break and all the activity up and down the beach. Another attraction in that area that we didn't take time to visit this trip, but it's a must-see for golfaholics, is the World Golf Hall of Fame, of course, is right there. And then also TPC Sawgrass, which we did tour the clubhouse as well as a few holes before we headed over to Orlando for the show. But TPC Sawgrass was just wonderful. They gave us a great tour and spent some time with us, and I got a tremendous amount of pictures. I'll probably try and put something up on the blog about that in the future, and maybe we can talk about it more. But TPC Sawgrass, that is, you know, I've heard a lot about it. I had never been there. It is really, really something to see. So if any of our listeners are going to that area, check out TPC Sawgrass. and then also the World Golf Hall of Fame right there. And if you got some time, spend a little time on the St. Augustine Beach. It's outstanding. Plus, there's a little restaurant right across there. Yeah, yeah.
No, go ahead. After you're done with that, I just have a question about the BC Sawgrass.
Yeah, go ahead.
So you got to tour the whole course, or just part of it? Were you able to go to that famous island and all that?
We went out and looked at 16, 17, and 18. And, I got some great pictures. 16, the way the pros play it, the way I would play it, it's not nearly as difficult as the way the pros play it, because they're trying off the tee, and from where they tee at the back tee, they have to work a draw into the fairway to have the angle, because the big tree sits out there on the right side of the right rough. So they have to hit a draw off that, so they're kind of on the left center. So they have an angle into that island green. It's a peninsula green, but it's surrounded by water pretty much. And they're trying to hit it in two. Myself, I'm hitting it down there, laying it up to the side, and then, chipping it over. So, I'm not really concerned about the water the way I play. But for those guys, they're trying to hit it on the green. So it really is a real risk-reward hole. Plus, there's a ridge that runs through the green that really affects it also. And then
you mean to tell me that all these years the pros have had it wrong? They should just change that. And oh man, this is just remarkable. Now I just want to see the players this in May. How is it going to be played? But one thing that when you see that the change, because you're used to seeing it on the TV, but then actually to see it, I mean, is it as impressive as you see it on the TV that stadium feeling that you get from the TPC Sawgrass, is that what you get when you start there? Of course,
yes.
We don't have the galleries and all that, but can you picture and visualize that once you're there?
Absolutely, and it's quite dramatic. You're up the viewing area when you're up on the mounds. You're probably like on 16 fairway. You're up about 15 feet. You're up a long ways. You're up pretty high above where the players would be down there. And then the slopes from the tee, the back of the tee on 17 around to behind the green on 17, the island green, of course, that's all built up. And so on TV, that really looks like that's flat. With the players, it's fairly level from the tee across the water to the green, it's fairly flat. But the slope behind the tee goes straight up. And I know you always see people standing right behind the tee, and so they fill that hill. But that hill goes straight up. I mean, it would be hard to stand on that hill if you're standing very long, because it would be hard on my feet, I know, and legs, because it's very steep and it goes up high. I mean, like I say, it goes up about 15 feet. So, and that goes all the way around, and it's a steep slope. So that's the stadium effect. But, yes, it is very severe. The one thing that I was amazed at, though, I stood on 18 tee, where the pros tee, and took some pictures, and there's more room to hit it out there than what it looks like on TV. It looks like on TV, like the trees and the water, and you've only got about 10 yards, but there's a lot more room out there. There's plenty of room to hit it. And besides that, they don't have to really hit it clear out to those trees. As long as these guys are, they can lay back just a hair, but they're trying to get it down there as far as they can. But 18, and I have to say this, the wind normally blows there, and it wasn't really blowing that hard the day we were there, but I'm sure when the wind blows, that makes a big difference also. But 16, 17, and 18 are really dramatic. They're really cool to see. And the clubhouse, Carlos, it's off the charts. Off the charts. Beautiful. What a wonderful place. But, hey, let's move on. So that's up in the, St. Augustine, that's clear up. Jacksonville, that's clear up in the northeast corner of the state. We went to Orlando for a week, as we said. Then we moved on down to Port St. Lucie, which is about an hour and 45 minutes south of Orlando, still north of Palm Beach, about 45 minutes. And that is where PGA Golf Club is. And they have four courses there. They have the Wanamaker, the Dye, and the St. Lucie Trail. And then they also have a wonderful golf course, the Pete Dye course. I played it last year. And in between last year and this year, they did a renovation. They new grass, new tees, new fairways, new greens. They made the greens. They took the greens back to the original dimensions. They'd grown in a little bit around the edges. They did a little bit of work on a few bunkers. And that course is so well bunkered. The bunkers on that golf course, I think, are some of the finest bunkers on any golf course I've ever played. It's one of my favorite golf courses in Florida, the Pete Dye course at PGA Golf Club. And, of course, PGA Golf Club is where they have a lot of PGA pros, the club pros. That's where they have a lot of tournaments in the wintertime. They were having a big Winter National coming in there after we left. And I see there was a lot of the pros in there playing on Facebook. I saw they had pictures posted and different things. But it's a wonderful facility. We've had Dick Gray on the show before. Dick is the head superintendent there. PGA Golf Club, if you remember, when Ted Bishop became president of the PGA, PGA Golf Club was really run down. It was in poor shape. The pros didn't want to go there anymore. They were sick of it. And Ted Bishop hired his old buddy Dick Gray to come down and become the superintendent. And Dick has brought it back. I mean, it's really anybody would be happy to play there now. If it's open to the public, you can get a tee time. They keep at least two courses every day open to the public for tee times. They do have memberships there. They have housing around there if you want to rent a condo or you want to buy a condo or you want to, there's hotels. Anything that you want to do is there. It's a great place to go if you're going down that way to play golf, and it's far enough south where you get good enough weather. The next place I want to – any questions about that, Carlos, before I move on?
No, really. Keep going on that. I have some more later on the topic. So yeah.
Okay. The next place that we stopped, we moved on down to West Palm Beach, to the Palm Beach area, and we got to play at PGA National. I shouldn't mention I got to play Seminole, which I can't even talk about that. Yeah,
I
know. I
have to go through that.
I can only tell you that in the group behind me, J.C. Sneed was playing, and he was one of the minor celebrities that was there that day. So it was unbelievable. Okay, it was unbelievable.
You were among the stars.
I really was. It was a great day. Really want to thank for inviting me there to play. The person invited me, the member. It was just a day where I will never forget. I'm telling you right now. and then the next day we played PGA National Resort. We played the Champions Course. There's four courses at PGA National also, now. It's called PGA National, but it's owned privately, and they just have a licensing agreement to use the PGA of America name. But it is a wonderful, wonderful resort. They also have condos, housing around the area. It's an enclosed community. The PGA of America office is actually set right outside the gate, so they are right there. The Champions Course is the home of the Bear Trap, holes number 15, 16, and 17, and the Honda Classic. Carlos, yes, I did lose a ball in the water on number 15. But
Go ahead. Say
no, no.
What are you going to say? But did you lose a club? Did you lose a club?
I didn't lose a club, okay?
Okay.
But I did lose a ball. But my playing companion... Mike May, who's been on the show, played all three holes in one over, which, he had two pars.
There you go, Mike.
He played very well. And so, and I got to say, okay, I got to tell you, the thing that really, PGA National is really a wonderful golf course, a champion course, really wonderful. But it's been warm and fairly rainy in Florida over the winter here, and the rough there is off the charts right now. It is thick. It's lush. It's about 2.5 inches. They're not mowing it. The superintendent wants it to get up to around 4 inches. And I'm telling you, right now, if I missed the fairway and went over into the rough, I just had to take an iron or something and just hack it out of there, okay? I mean, I'm just trying to get it back onto the fairway somehow because it was really, really nasty. So I'm telling you, if you're picking for a fantasy league for the Honda Classic, pick a Zach Johnson, a Steve Stricker, or somebody that hits in the fairway, because if these long bombers, if they're hitting it in the rough, I don't care if they've got wedges in their hands or not. It ain't going to happen. That's really tough. The rough but there right now is.
So they really don't mow it during the,
no.
I mean, during the tournament? Is it that thick?
It's that thick, and they're not going to mow it. They want it to grow. They want it to get taller. And it covers, I mean, when you walk in now, it covers up your shoes. And it is so thick, it's unbelievable.
But that's like a U.S. Open thing.
It's like a U.S. Open. I'm telling you, I'll tell you, if the wind blows a little bit during the tournament in a couple of weeks, even par will be a good score.
Wow.
It's for sure. Yeah. It's going to be really difficult. And when they get to 15, 16, 17, if the wind's blowing, you know, with those little greens on those par 3s, 15 and 17, look out. Look out.
Wow.
From there, we left Palm Beach. We went across the Alligator Alley. We went across I-75 to our favorite spot in Florida, Naples in southwest Florida. And Carlos, we have the interview with Lynn Josephson that we taped at their office. Lynn was invited us over to see him and talk to him a little bit, and he helped kind of arrange a little bit of our trip. So why don't you play an interview with Lynn? He talks a little bit about
sure.
the Naples area.
Of course, you know, while you were there in Naples, you took that opportunity to visit those new offices of Golf Navigators, and you sat there with co-founder and president of GLNN, Golf Life Navigators, Lynn Josephson. He talked to you about Naples and the great opportunities, golf opportunities here in Southwest Florida. So let's play that interview that we have with Lynn Josephson. Go away.
We are here in Naples, Florida, and we happen to be talking to Lynn Josephson, who is one of the co-founders and president of Golf Life Navigators here. And Lynn, you're working out of an office called what, Naples Accelerator?
Naples Accelerator, yes. It's an interesting spot, Fred. It is it's like an incubator for startup companies, only the accelerator, they call it a soft landing area. So for startups that are beyond proof of concept and now are into a different level to where they're growing their company and looking for funding.
So Golf Life Navigators has been in business for a couple of years. You're kind of a step up from that. You've been helping people find the right location to retire to down here in Florida for a couple of years now.
Golf Life Navigators started 3 years ago with Jason Becker, my business partner, who's an FGCU graduate, graduated number one in his class in the first graduating class at PGM at Gulf Coast University several years ago. And then he worked for us at Golf Club of the Everglades. Did his internship with us, but he came to me with the idea and the concept, you know, to help people that are coming to Florida and Scottsdale. There's just too many choices, Fred, you know, for them to figure out on their own. So we save the consumer a lot of time, money, and aggravation. A perfect example, I had a couple that I was talking to from Kansas City the other day that they were down here about a year ago. And they started looking, and he told me on the phone the other night, he said, we got so frustrated, they said, oh, the heck with it, let's go out to dinner. And we narrow the choices down for them, because you know, and rely on local knowledge, Fred. And we have people in Scottsdale and Tampa, Sarasota, Palm Beach, Jacksonville, Orlando, PGA professionals, because we're all PGA professionals, and we're trusted advisors, and we help them find the right place to live.
Well, you're here in Naples, Fort Myers. I think there's over 90 golf courses right here in the immediate area. We were out the Esplanade yesterday. There's the Vineyards. There's Tiburon. There's on and on and on. They're all beautiful locations, but they all are unique and have you need to fit the right person for that location.
No, that's our goal. And we just created something called the Pro Guide 3, which is a survey. It's our proprietary survey that was done with the help of a gentleman who is the only gentleman in the United States that has his a doctorate in why people join golf courses. But he and Iowa State University, who he was working with some of the professors, created this Pro Guide 3. And we use it as a very helpful tool that we send to the consumer that has a lot of data in it for why they join clubs, both internal, external factors, their price range, their budget, their needs, and their wants. And we use that and then sort it out and try to find three or four courses or communities that we think would fit their pro guide.
And it doesn't just have to be golf. We've been staying in Naples Bay Resort this week. They're a marina. They have a tennis club. They have a swimming pool. They have a fitness center and a spa. And you're also partnering with them because of amenities they provide along with the partnerships they have with the golf clubs. It might make sense to be a member there.
Naples Bay Resort is a really great thing. You can walk to downtown Naples. It's right on Naples Bay. They have a resort-style pool. They have a strong tennis program, a spa and a health area that is really, really good. Great outdoor casual bar around the poolside. And, yes, we're trying to help them, people, to their resort. And it's a great place to stay because they do have association with three or four different golf courses. People can come down and do a stay and play.
We're in love with the whole Naples area. And, Lynn, we're always happy to work with you guys here at Golf Life Navigators. Keep up the good work, and we'll be talking to you soon again.
Thanks, Fred, and have a safe trip back up north, buddy.
There you have it. That was an interview with Lynn Joseph. He is the president and co-founder of Golf Life Navigators. So, Fred, anything that you would like to add before we move on to the rest of the practice range?
Yeah, just to wrap up, Carlos, as we mentioned, there's over 90 golf courses and resorts just in the Southwest Florida area. They offer something for everyone. The sunsets over the Gulf of Mexico are stunning, and a delicious lunch at Gumbo Limbo on the beach at the Ritz-Carlton is always a highlight that we try and get in when we're down there. As we mentioned in the interview, we stayed at the Naples Bay Resort. It's very near Fifth Avenue in downtown Naples. You can walk to the great shopping and the great restaurants and all the activities they have there. The Naples Bay Resort itself, just a fantastic, fantastic place. The accommodations and service are first class. Many of the employees have come out of the Ritz-Carlton system, so you can imagine what kind of service you get there. And then the Naples Pier is a great place for an afternoon walk or to view one of those great sunsets. We also spent a relaxing afternoon on Vanderbilt Beach, which is just a little bit north of Naples. And then one other property that I want to mention that's one of our favorites, we stayed at before, we didn't actually get there this time, but Naples Beach and Golf Resort. We've had rooms there where you can walk right onto the beach, or if you turn left, you can walk across the street right into the pro shop. The golf course is right across the street. So, and many people don't realize this, but when Jack Nicklaus was young, his family vacationed at the Naples Beach and Golf Club. And in fact, it was the first course that young Jackie broke 40 for 9 holes when he was 11 years old. So it kind of holds a special place. They just did a renovation of that golf course, and so it's all new. They've updated it, and I didn't get it. I was supposed to play it, but we didn't get a chance to do it. It just didn't work out. So I'll do that on the next trip. But, Carlos, to wrap this up, this was truly one of the best trips my wife and I have taken to Florida. And we want to thank TPC Sawgrass, PGA Golf Club, PGA National, and the Naples Bay Resort for making it such a wonderful adventure. We just had a great, great time for those 2 weeks, and wish we were still there.
Oh, Florida, Florida, Miami, South Beach.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, we're talking about golf, right? I'm sorry.
Yeah. We didn't make it. Yeah. We didn't stop. We drove through on 75. We saw all that over there, but we didn't make it to South Beach or Miami this trip.
See, if I go to Miami and I don't go there, I wasn't in Miami, especially
it's a waste of
the 8th Street. Yeah, 8th Street and go to La Carreta and eat my pork chops. I didn't go to Miami if I don't do that. So.
Yeah. I'll get that next trip.
I'll show you where it is. Don't worry. I'll let you know.
Okay.
But hey, with that, we wrap up our practice range. Let's take one more short break, our last one. When we come back, we have our final putts. You don't want to go away. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the final putts. And I'm going to start right away like I usually do. You know, Diana Murphy has been formally elected to a second one-year term as USGA president. Murphy, who is 60 years old, was nominated for a second term in November, but was formally reelected Saturday at the USGA's annual meeting in Washington, D.C. She's just the second woman to serve as USGA president in the organization's 122-year history. Her reelection may have been overshadowed by Mike Davis' exciting revelation of efforts to simplify the rules coming to a course near you sooner than expected, with a rumored potential timing of a completed altered rules of golf by January 1st of 2019. So, okay, we know it won't take much to overshadow a USGA executive committee news, but well, on top of that, the annual meeting revealed plans to introduce USGA brand national championship for disabled golfers. Bradley Klein has that story on for golfweek.com, including some of the dynamics involved in shaping the creation of an event that seems about 3 to 4 years away. Murphy's first year on the job was not without incident. You might remember she was issuing an apology after calling Brittany Lang Bethany during the trophy ceremony at the U.S. Women's Open in July. So, you know, that can ensure that trophy presentations might be fun this year. Her husband, Reg, was also USGA president in 1994 to 1995. He remains the managing director of Rock Solid Holdings, LLC, a private equity firm based in St. Simons Island in Georgia. And also, to finalize here, Top Golf. They continue to break more ground on the golf and entertainment front by recently debuting its brand new Swing Suite concept at the Four Seasons Houston. This unique experience takes simulation to the next level with two state-of-the-art golf simulators, comfy seating, HDTVs, and food and beverage service. Now golfers and non-golfers alike have a place to kick back, enjoy a crafted cocktail, and hit some balls indoors. So don't worry if it's outside 110 degrees or -5. You're going to be pretty warm in there. You know, while Top Golf has not formally stated if or when they will roll out with this Swing Suites at any other of the locations, it seems clear the concept could be a potential new avenue for the company. This would allow them to get into the heavily populated urban areas where the necessary real estate required to build their elaborate facilities are just too costly, ultimately bringing their product directly to the consumer, and that for it would really, really bring this concept back down to the masses and really could influence it to see him to the help of growing golf as well?
Well, Carlos, we have, you know, Toledo is the winter golf mecca of the Midwest. You know, we've got 9 or 10 retail locations with, I think, last count, it was close to 30 golf simulators just in town here. And so you can go several of the places, have food and beverage available. So it's a couple of the golf courses set up. They take their clubhouse, they set up the machines inside, and then they have golf. They have leagues, they have scramble tournaments, they have all kind of hole-in-one competitions. They have stuff going on all winter. So we're real familiar with that, and it's really a big deal up here. Hey, Carlos, we've been talking about this women's issue with mistreatment at the golf club awarded the 2020 Olympics in Japan, but it seems the women do not appear to be all that concerned. The Japan Golf Association said in a statement, there's 212 female members and there's been no complaints about the way they're treated or the rights they have. The door is wide open for female players. They just can't play on Sunday, Carlos. I don't think that's unfair. What's wrong with that? The International Olympic Committee on Friday requested that Tokyo Game organizers address the issue and find a solution that will allow women and men equal use of the facility, calling the situation contrary to the spirit of the Olympic Games. Well, the Japan Golf Association contends there's nothing to see here, no problem exists, let's move along, nothing to see. So it continues. The story continues. Trump National Golf Course was ordered by the court to pay a $5.7 million judgment to some former members. This really doesn't have anything to do with Donald Trump personally, except that he licensed his name to the course, and the executives riled up past members of the club when they were denied the return of their initial investment in the old course like they were supposed to have been. But the court did award the former members a $5.7 million judgment, so everybody should be happy, and we just had to get a Donald Trump mention into the show, Carlos. Two winners were selected for the 2016 Herbert Wharton Winn Book Award given by the Golf Writers Association of America. The award recognizes and honors outstanding contributions to golf literature while attempting to broaden public interest in and knowledge of the game of golf. Kevin Robbins, author of Harvey Pinnock, The Life and Wisdom of the Man Who Wrote the Book on Golf, and Peter Lewis, author of Why Are There 18 Holes? St. Andrews and the Evolution of Golf Courses, 1764 to 1890. Both received the prestigious award at the USGA's annual meeting last Saturday. Antigua was announced today as the official brand for the 2017 Solheim Cup. They have been involved with the Ryder Cup and the LPGA with the Solheim Cup several different years. And so they're happy to do that, and they have good stuff, Carlos. I can tell you because I have several Antigua shirts and sweaters, and I love them. I'm telling you. If you think you're a pretty fair putter, you can join the major series of putting with their finals to be held in Las Vegas in October. The events are scheduled in several cities around the country. You can find a qualifier fire near you at msop.com, and then this EN qualifier, but msop.com. And then just a real quick programming note here, CBS Sports with Jim Nance and Gary McCord hosting will be airing the Celebrity Hole-in-One competition from Pebble Beach on Thursday at 1:30 a.m., Scheduled to compete are Justin Timberlake, Peyton Manning, Mark Wahlberg, Bill Murray, and Toby Keith, and they'll all be trying for a $1 million prize for their favorite charity. And, Carlos, don't forget to catch the diverse stories from around the world of golf on Back 9 Report TV on Roku. You can go to myroku, that's myroku.com, to open account and download it today, Carlos.
Today, don't forget about that. Well, Back Niners, that will wrap up another week of the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Special thanks to our VIG, very important guest of the week, Lynn Josephson. He's the co-founder and president of Golf Life Navigators. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Blog Talk Radio. Or if you missed it, check it out on iTunes or TuneIn. And if you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres. Along with Fred Alvader, we wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.